I'm Mimi Rosenberg.
I'm Ken Ash.
We're building bridges. We're building the bridge to Medicare for All with Dr. Ed Weisbart, the National Board Secretary of Physicians for a National Health Program and the Vice President of the Consumers Council of Missouri. Dr. Weisbart, Ed, you said we spent more than 100 years trying to leap across a chasm to Medicare for All. It's time we start building the bridge across the chasm. Now that we know what's on the other side, a healthcare system based on justice, equality, fairness, prudence, and community. Well, we need a strategy to get there.
Ed, 59 years ago today, President Lyndon Johnson signed Medicare into law, a high watermark in the fight for universal health care that had started decades before and that continues to this day. What's the significance of promulgating that law, and what did it do for we the people?
Well, thanks for having me. That law, the Medicare law, 1965, transformed the healthcare landscape. It rescued seniors and people with disability from poverty. It extended their lives. People on Medicare have better life expectancies than they would if it weren't for that law. It's a hugely successful public health program. It's imperfect, but it's great. And our mission, frankly, is to improve it further, fix the things that weren't right when it was first set up, and then expand that so that everybody in the United States has it. People not just at age 65 or with disability, but people at age 55 or 45, 25, teenagers, kids, make it a program, the same program for everybody in the country. So that's our goal. That's what we want to try to accomplish. That's what we're working on.
You know, Ed, even before we get to the issues around Medicare for All and Medicare Advantage, one of the things that's been consistently disturbing, and I wonder how you get around this or how you analyze it, is people from the generally have the sense, the private sector is better. Even when you point out, look at Canada, look at Europe, look at most of, if not all, the Western nations and stuff who have some facsimile of a universal healthcare system, they say, no, ours is still better. Even in this form, you have to wait forever, you don't get the services you want, people die waiting there. So how do you respond still to the overall, we want universal health care and we want to take the insurance out of it, we want Medicare for All, but wait a minute, the private sector does it better?
Well, I'm a fan of the private sector for many things, and I wish that that were true in healthcare. But we have an overwhelming body of evidence that that's just not the case in healthcare. It's not a market. It doesn't follow the principles of a free market. You don't have consumers in healthcare. You just never will. Nobody wakes up in the morning and says, gee, you know, I really want a colonoscopy, or nobody having a heart attack is going to be able to stop and tell the ambulance, wait a minute, let me go shop around for the best deal on ambulances. I think there was a Groupon on ambulances this week. It's not a market economy. And, you know, when you start introducing for-profit enterprises into healthcare, well, they do what they're designed to do. They take advantage of healthcare to make a profit. That's what they try to do. Every place that's tried that has figured out that that's really not the right way to go. And so, you know, I mean, the essence of insurance, of course, is to spread the risk so that the chances you can't afford to pay for your heart attack personally. You can't afford to build your own burn unit. You can't afford to do, no, none of us can. So instead, we all pitch in together, you know, we as a community buy a burn unit, build a burn unit, hoping that none of us will have to use it. That's the nature of insurance. Spread it across the most people that you can, and then none of us has too big of a burden to carry financially. And the best way to do that is to take 335 million of us, is that the number? Put us all into this one program, and then it's way more efficient. The insurance industry, on the other hand, has an overhead of 15% or more in some cases, and they have to because they advertise on TV, they have all of these people that are designed to get in the way of healthcare, to keep you from getting healthcare. They have legions of people. It's very expensive to do things that way. And Medicare itself operates with a 2% overhead and a fraction of the number of people because it's just simple. It's just simple.
Well, doctor, let's continue the prescription for Medicare for All and how to get there. And that is looking at who then are the real attack dogs against Medicare. It's under direct assault. Who and why, as we continue to march on to win Medicare for All, we have to know who the enemy is.
Sure. So the biggest opponent, of course, is the insurance industry, because they know that health insurance is their most profitable line of business. So they don't want to have a national health insurance program. They want to be in the game. You know, which kind of takes us to the question of Medicare Advantage. When Medicare Advantage was created some 23 years ago, it was with the premise that you kind of sketched out a few minutes ago. It was with the premise that no, government can't ever do anything right. We, the for-profit insurance industry, can do this much better. So they came to Congress and promised that they would improve the health of people in Medicare to the point that the federal government could pay these insurance companies 5% less for people in Medicare than what they pay for people in regular Medicare. And that was the promise. They said we would improve health, and by improving health for people in Medicare, we would be less expensive. So give us the business. Well, within a couple of years of the insurance industry being involved, they came back to Congress and said, hey, wait a minute. You didn't tell us. People in Medicare, they're sick. They're sick. So they actually changed the rules of the game and created all sorts of gimmicks and tricks so that now the insurance industry is paid up to 35% more than we pay for people in regular Medicare. And that's just not right. If we could take the money back from the insurance industries that are draining the Medicare trust fund, if we could get that money back from them, well, we could use that money to help us pay for hearing and vision and dentistry for everybody in Medicare, and frankly, for everybody in the country. We could use that money to make sure that there aren't any more copays or deductibles, to make sure that you can go to any doctor you want to. And that's the opposite of how the insurance industry works, right? The insurance industry is prepaid by Medicare. They're paid in advance by Medicare. They're capitated by Medicare for the people that they take care of, supposedly take care of. And once they're prepaid, they treat that, as I guess they should, as their own money. They treat that as their own money, no longer is our public money. They treat it as their own money. So then they're supposed to then pay for our health care out of that money, but they view it as their money at that point. And the last thing they want to do is have to pay for our health care, because that's then something they have to pay for. They'd rather use the money to invest in wherever they invest it and turn it into profits. So that means that they have their business model is based on getting in the way of healthcare. Their business model is based on telling you, no, you can't go to the best places in the country. You have to go to the places we pick. No, you can't go get your healthcare when you want to. You have to get our permission first. They delay care. They redirect care. And then they just say flat out, no, you can't. I know you think you need that. I know your doctor thinks you need that. But no, we, the all-powerful and wise insurance industry who've never met you, we know better than you and your doctor do. And no, you can't have that. Bad patient. You can't have that. And sometimes they actually will even tell you, sure, you can have this. And then you go off and get the care. And then they go back and tell the person who gave you the care that they're just not going to pay for it. Arnie Arneson just showed me a thing from a patient, a friend of hers, who was given approval to get from her insurance company to get the PET scan, that she needed. And on the approval form, it said, "We are approving this service, but we're not promising that we're going to pay for it."
Oh,
so
great.
They do everything they can to get in the way of care, to deny care, delay care, and just frankly not pay for it. And as a result, Americans are suffering, hurt, frankly dying, actually. There's one good example comparing Medicare Advantage to regular Medicare, to traditional Medicare, and they looked at cancer, people with cancer who went for cancer surgery, which of course these folks needed, and they found that people who needed cancer surgery in Medicare Advantage had to wait significantly longer than did people without Medicare Advantage who were in traditional Medicare. They had to wait longer. They ultimately couldn't even go to the National Cancer Centers of Excellence. They were much less likely to be able to go to the best places in the country. And as when you put those two things together, this study from the Journal of Clinical Oncology found that people who have these kinds of cancer surgeries were more likely to die postoperatively. They, in some cases, they were twice as likely to die in the 30 days after surgery. So, you know, you tell the insurance company this information, they go, "Well, yeah, but it was cheaper." It was cheaper.
Is that the issue for Medicare Advantage? Why is Medicare Advantage so much worse?
Yeah, so Medicare Advantage is not Medicare. It's called that, and it's advertised on TV as, oh, it's Medicare Advantage. And the insurance companies like to say, "Oh, you know, make sure you check out the latest benefits. Have you updated your Medicare?" So they like to promote it like it's Medicare, but it's not. You know, Medicare was set up in 1965, pretty simple, pretty straightforward, and that's sort of how traditional Medicare still works. We basically pay our taxes for it. We get our precious red, white, and blue Medicare card. We go see almost any doctor, almost any hospital in the country, anywhere in the country. You live in New York, but you move to, you're on vacation in Florida or whatever, and you can get healthcare anywhere in the country when you have Medicare. And you go see the doctor, or go to the hospital, or get a test, and Medicare pays for it. It's pretty much that simple. A little more complicated, but it's pretty much that simple. Medicare Advantage, which now roughly half of people in Medicare are in, Medicare Advantage is completely different. You can't go anywhere in the country. Matter of fact, in a lot of counties, a lot of areas, you can only see maybe one in three of the doctors in your community. In traditional Medicare, you can see almost anybody. But if you've signed up for Medicare Advantage, in many places, you can only see one out of three physicians in your community. You may not be able to see any of the hospitals in your community. So they don't want you to go to, they don't want you to be able to get your health care. That's an expense. It's completely different than traditional Medicare. But because they're so overpaid, like I said, they've got these games where they're paid $140 billion a year in 2022. And that was about 35% more than what people in traditional Medicare cost. Because they have this extra money, tens of billions of dollars of money that they don't need to actually pay for healthcare, they're able to use that for advertisements on television, for really high commissions to insurance brokers, for the promise of dentistry and hearing and vision. And they do give some of that, but they spend probably a very small fraction of that extra subsidy on hearing, vision, and dentistry. And, you know, they put the ads up that make it sound like, you know, you're going to have dentistry. Well, we know that people in Medicare Advantage have a much harder time getting dental care than do people in traditional Medicare if they have Medigap. We know that. We know that although it sounds like you have a dental benefit, they may tell you, well, but we're only going to pay for 25% of that kind of dental care. You know, they don't pay for stuff. And then finding a dentist in your community who takes the dental policy from Medicare Advantage is pretty hard. So it's bait and switch, right? It's bait and switch. They advertise all these extra benefits and they don't actually provide them.
So to win Medicare for all, we must reclaim Medicare from the profiteers. How do we do that?
So how do we do that? Well, it's a three-part strategy. The first is make Medicare Advantage corporations do what they claim they do. Make them do what they promised they would do back in 2003 when they were created. Make them do what they still today claim they do. They claim that they lower the cost of healthcare by improving health outcomes. That's what they claim. Okay, so the first part of the strategy is do that, Medicare Advantage corporations. That means we should not have to subsidize you. Give us back that $140 billion because you said you could do this for less. You didn't say you needed a subsidy. So the first part of the strategy is take back that $140 billion and let the Medicare Advantage companies win their market, win their case by actually making care better. And, you know, we all know that's a bunch of hooey. We all know that's a bunch of hooey. There's no magic that Medicare Advantage companies can somehow coordinate care better than your doctor already does. They're not going to be able to save money by doing any of that. That's why they demanded the extra money. That's why they're doing that. So the first part of the strategy is, okay, do what you said you're going to do and lower cost by improving care, which means your subsidies are over and done today. No more of those. The second part of the strategy is we have to improve traditional Medicare. And people who are in Medicare Advantage may be suffering from these delays of care and denials of care and taking away their choice of doctor and hospital, but they do get some perks from being in Medicare Advantage. They do have this modest dental benefit, which, as I said, isn't that great. They do have some eyeglass coverage. They do have some hearing aid coverage. They have a maximum out-of-pocket so that the copays and deductibles are limited to something like $8,000 a year. So there is some stuff in there. So take the extra money that the Medicare Advantage corporations are rating us for and put that into improving traditional Medicare. So that's really important as the second part of the strategy, because if you did actually impact the business model for Medicare Advantage and they did cut back from the marketplace, you would want to make sure that the people who are in Medicare Advantage today didn't suffer, didn't lose any of the benefits that they're getting today. And frankly, it's a good thing to do anyway, because you know, it's hard for me to decide who doesn't need to have eyeglasses if they can't see right. That's hard for me to say, no, your teeth aren't as important as somebody else. You know, it's everybody in the country, certainly everybody in Medicare, should have hearing, vision, dentistry, be protected from high costs, all of that stuff. So the first part of the strategy is tell Medicare Advantage companies they have to do what they said they can do and cut off their subsidies. Second part is protect the people in Medicare Advantage if they go back to traditional Medicare by making sure that those benefits are still available to them, hearing, vision, dentistry, and a few other things. Then the third part of the strategy is if we did those first two things, well, then why wouldn't we give that improved form of Medicare to everybody? It would be a far superior insurance than what almost anybody in the country has from their employer. So make the transition and make sure that everybody in the country can have that.
Well, I have two critically important questions. One, do you make house calls? No. We are speaking with Dr. Ed Weisbart with Physicians for a National Health Program, and I've been looking for a good doctor. But I also want to know, I've got a miserable insurance company, United Healthcare, and then there's Blue Cross Blue Shield, who've erected these, what you call, cruel barriers to care and are laughing all the way to the bank. So what do we do to wrest away from the United Healthcares and the Blue Cross Blue Shields to get to Medicare for all as well?
Well, I think it starts with exposing them. I mean, we have to come be united in this as a people. When you are trying to get your health care and you run into some of these roadblocks and United, for example, as you said, doesn't let you get what you need, it's really easy to think it's your fault. It's really easy to think, oh, I'm in this weird circumstance, or gee, I just don't know how to navigate. No, it's not your fault. It's the business model of these insurance companies. So the way we wrest it away is demand from Congress that they put in the accountability, that they put in the requirements, and, you know, frankly, to advocate for Medicare for all, because that's the solution to getting the insurance industry away from here. But the way to do that, I think, is first of all, we have to prove to the American people that actually we do know how to run a really, really good insurance product, And make Medicare sing, make Medicare into the humming machine that it was designed to be. It operates with a 2% overhead. Insurance companies operate with a 15% overhead. So take Medicare, make it really hum and sing so that everybody who has it just adores it. And then I think the popular demand for something that good, everybody would look at that and go, well, why can't I have that? Well, you can have that. Tell Congress you want that. Have them co-sponsor the Medicare for All legislation.
What's the prescription, doctor, for traveling the road to reach Medicare for All, which has never been more important? There's a National Day of Action, isn't there?
Yes, actually. So the group that I spend most of my time with, Physicians for a National Health Program, we're a nonprofit, nonpartisan group, and we just think the strategy that I spelled out to you is really, really important. And the piece that we're really kind of trying to amplify right now is exposing the dangers, the hazards, the outrageousness of Medicare Advantage. And so to that end, we've been organizing a National Day of Action all around the country. We want communities to gather together in some way, speak out against the Medicare Advantage corporations that are hurting us. So that's September 30th. So September 30th, there are going to be events in many parts of the country, and people should keep an eye out for that and get engaged. And you can learn about that by going to our organization's website. That's Physicians for a National Health Program, or PNHP.org. And if you go there, you can find it. But the most direct way is to go to PNHP.org/MAPetition, Medicare Advantage Petition. So if you go to PNHP.org/MAPetition, you'll be able to sign our petition against Medicare Advantage. It's a pretty simple petition. It says, "We, the undersigned, demand Congress and the President protect Medicare beneficiaries by cracking down on insurance company abuses and significantly improving the traditional public Medicare program." So if you go to PNHP.org/MAPetition, you can sign our petition. And if you get onto that website, we'll also then have your email address if you like, and we can keep you apprised as the September 30th Day of Action starts to roll out more across the country.
So on the Day of Action, do we take over insurance companies?
Well, it's important to match your strategy.
Like Occupy
with your
Wall
power.
Street?
Yes. That's right. Yeah. Every community will do the thing that they think they have the power to accomplish.
So then let's talk about how we build this movement. I in the few minutes that we have left, there was a point when Bill Clinton was running for office where the number one issue that was defined by the electorate was health care. Now, the number one issue, and this seems to be true for the Republicans and the Democrats, have been whipped into the frenzy of xenophobia and say immigration is the critical issue. Oh, my God. Oh, infuriating. So how do we build this movement back of seniors and physicians and students and people with disabilities and everybody else who cares about Medicare, about health care justice? How do we build this movement and put Medicare for All back on the table and make it indispensable and not be distracted with Obamacare or the like?
Well, I think the first thing in that is to give people the hope that it's possible. I think that's one of the hardest pieces is when you think this is something off in the future. I don't know what I can do. The first thing to do when you feel frustrated is to take action, get engaged. So that's where the Day of Action comes in place. So start getting involved, sign the petition, tell your friends about this stuff, get engaged, learn more, read more. I think when people understand that it's possible, that there's actually a strategy, that there are many ways to get engaged and to raise your voice, I think we start to see more of a connection and people start to feel more like it's more something where they can engage with more easily. But all the issues that you've raised are connected, every piece of this, take what's going on with the military, take the environment, take the any issue that you want to pick, And it's all related to our fragile and dysfunctional democracy. So, but the thing that's different about healthcare is we all use it almost every day, right? Anybody who takes medications takes their pill like every day, sometimes several times a day. We all go to the doctor every few months. We all wind up going to the hospital every few years. This is something that's not theoretical. This is something that's happening to other people. This is all of us. So I think there's a tremendous opportunity for us all to engage. And like I said, the first step right now for people would be to go to pnhp.org/MAPetition and find a way to engage on September 30th.
Well, Dr. Ed Weisbart, Secretary of Physicians for a National Health Program, you made the prescription relatively easy, and it is a matter of life and death hours. So go to that website, get on board with Physicians for a National Health Program, and fight for Medicare for All. And the issue here is, it is about democracy. Health justice is about the maintenance of a democracy, and it's a matter of us breaking out of our individual silos. Medicare for All, yes. Medicare Advantage, hell no. We come together, we build that movement, and under the leadership of Physicians for a National Health Program. Dr. Ed Weisbart, thank you so much. We'll have you back again because it's a matter of life and breath or death. It's been great speaking with you.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
I'm Mimi Rosenberg.
I'm Ken Nash.
And we continue to seek with Building Bridges to educate, agitate, and organize to empower the disenfranchised and certainly, no more genocide in our name, not another nickel, not another dime, no more money for Israel's crime. Thanks for letting us into your house, and keep on keeping on.